Welcome in to an episode of Leading the Flock. I'm your host, Alexis Downey, and I'm very excited to be joined today by Brock McGillis, who is a former professional hockey player and also the first openly gay men's hockey professional player. Brock, thank you so much for taking the time in studio today.
Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah, and I just got to witness a really awesome speech and lecture that you had, the Shiftmakers tour, taking it here to Anaheim. Talk about the tour. This is basically the end of it, but how you've been able to travel around these last couple months and, you know, make a difference.
Yeah, so it started last year in Canada, and I've come to the realization that I'm a masochist, and I decide to torture myself now annually and expand on that. What I decided to do was, I was like, I'm going to do something bold, because everyone always told me, you can't be everywhere. Like, oh, your work's nice. This is stuff you do is cool, but you can't be everywhere. And it almost felt dismissive. And I was like, no, quack that. I'm going to be everywhere. And I'm going to go everywhere, and you're going to see me everywhere. And I finally convinced some sponsors to do it. And I started what was then called Culture Shift Tour. And I just found that term kind of divisive and not really fully, like, it is about shifting the culture, but I don't want people to see it as, your culture is horrible and I'm here to, you know what I mean? So I was like, became Shiftmakers. But year one, I went to the 7 NHL cities in Canada and their vicinities, and I went to 103 teams in 100 days.
Wow.
Year two, I went coast to coast in Canada, and Canada's long. and I went to 27 cities, 140-ish teams in 85 days, and then took 2 days off and got on a plane to Seattle and started in the U.S. And went from Seattle to Southern California. I was here like 3 weeks ago, and I was working with the Lady Ducks and the Junior Gulls and Coachella Valley, and then worked my way to the East Coast, then the Midwest, and now I'm back here. And I haven't slept or taken a break in 5.5 months, and I'm tired.
Understandably so. You've gotten to share your mission with so many different people. When you first got into public speaking, when you retired from hockey, what was that mission? Has it changed since the beginning days?
Oh gosh, it's changed since like November. Like literally, I feel sometimes like I'm a comedian on the road working out a set, like, because it's always evolving, and maybe one day I'll do a special, be my TED talk. But it started out when I first started speaking, and it just kind of happened. Like after I came out publicly, I started getting calls, we come talk at this event. And I was like, yeah. And then I'd be sitting down at night, all night, writing out my life. And over and over and over again, and trying to memorize it and trying to figure it out. And I was like, and I go in and I just share my story. And it was nice. It was cute. And it was, you know, people got a little bit of eye opening to the impact of language, behaviors, and attitudes in society and as a gay person, et cetera. And then it became about rallying people to great shifts. And using the story I shared in there about the player, hockey player I was working with, I heard another hockey player say, that's okay. And said, we don't say that here. Give me 50 push-ups. And it became about shifts like that and how we can create them and me sort of figuring out how to do that. And then it's really evolved even since December. I was in a session in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. It was minus 45 Celsius outside. It was cold winter December night in Saskatchewan, and I just out of nowhere said, is that brave? And I saw there was five teams in the room, and I saw every player's eyes light up. And I went, oh, I just unlocked something I didn't even know I was trying to do. And then I've sort of massaged it a little bit and tinkered with it to now it's gone from my story to being a shift maker, which it still is, but now sort of within teaching them how to be one, it's challenging their courage and bravery, challenging them to be brave and standing up not laughing at things, standing up when somebody says something or does something that's problematic. And for anyone in your group, whether it's bullying a teammate or targeting somebody in society, et cetera. But also breaking the conformity and having the courage to stand up and share something they typically wouldn't tell a teammate, and actually sharing something that's deep and scary for them versus, I love cooking. I make grilled cheese. Cool. Nobody gives a quack. And in doing that, in challenging their courage, and it's almost like, and this happens in women's rooms too, so I don't want to say it's just a masculinity thing, but it's like a toughness thing. It's like an athlete competitive thing. But we also saw it that worked in corporate settings.
Yeah.
By challenging that, people stand up and they want to be brave. And when they do, they share and they be vulnerable with each other. And that actually, it's a psychologically safe space to do so. And it actually fosters an environment. We talk a lot in hockey, and I'm sure you've interviewed enough players over the year. And
yes.
And in those rooms, like, you hear things like, we're family, or we're brothers, or we're sisters, et cetera. And it's like, are you?
Mm-hmm.
You talk about four things. You guys talking about women, video games, fighting, sports, music, as long as it's rap or country. Maybe a little Taylor Swift mix in every once in a while after a winner, or Miley Cyrus party in the USA. But ultimately, it's surface level BS. That's not family.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm seeing it where they're going deep and they're sharing, and everyone's in tears, and it's vulnerable and real and raw. And that's toughness.
Mm-hmm.
That's brave. That's courageous, because it's hard. It's hard to not just bottle it up. But ultimately, it's 10 steps back from what my goal initially was. That's great. Inclusive environments, blah, 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 blah. But by focusing on this, and everyone feels like they can be themselves, well, now hopefully the gay player can, the BIPOC player can, the person who is of faith can, the woman in the men's side of the sport can be themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we're going to get there, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. When listening in the room during when you were talking, I was just telling you, you really have a unique ability to be able to bring out that vulnerability from people. And that takes time. It takes comfortability. But knowing that people feel comfortable with you, how do you think that can help you continue to make changes?
It's a unique skill. I think it's like my superpower, in a sense that I can get, from an NHL player right down to, a child, to open up and be vulnerable and share with me in an hour. I think it comes from the fact that I'm very open and vulnerable at the start, but I disarm people early. I make it fun and light and real. If you're not laughing within the first 5 minutes of the session, then I've failed, or you're homophobic. Because if you don't laugh at my jokes, you're homophobic. because that's the reality, though. And I always thought about it, and I went, well, how do people learn?
Mm-hmm.
What do they learn about? They learn about things they enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
If we can make it fun and light, I watch body language, because I talk about body language, and I just see at the start, people are tense, and it doesn't matter if it's a hockey locker room to a corporate setting. They're a little tense. They don't know what I'm going to talk about, and they just can get lectured for an hour and told they're terrible people and blah, 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 blah. And within 5-10 minutes, the shoulders start to slouch a little and they relax. And then the more I tell jokes, they are disarmed. And then I'm self-deprecating as well. So then, or I like pump myself up fully and then balance both. And they're just having a good time. And I think that allows them to learn. And then I can come in with some coach talk almost and be that motivator and inspirational thing. And coupling all that together, then they're like willing and able. Like, I was talking to Jason Cooper, and he's like, I didn't think anyone would say a word.
Mm.
And I knew they would. I bet if we sat longer and we had more time, more people would have.
Mm-hmm.
I bet I could have got the whole room too, if I pushed it, and I didn't push it. It's, but I think I could have got that whole room to share, because they felt comfortable and safe.
Yeah.
And that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a wonderful thing. And in the way we've talked about this before, but your going around to all these different cities, NHL cities, how have you seen a shift in hockey in general through these last couple of years since you know you got out of playing and you got into this, and where is the hockey world at?
Well, I don't think 10 years ago somebody like me would be doing this.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to say that, like, whether I agree with everything going on and I'm happy with it, that's progress.
Mm-hmm.
And progress isn't linear and it isn't fast, but that is progress. I go in with NHL teams in their locker rooms. 10 years ago, a gay guy would not be going in to talk about, and they assume I'm just talking about gay stuff. And but that wouldn't have happened 10 years ago. That would not have happened. I would not be sitting here talking to the Ducks organization potentially, or any organization,
yeah,
10 years ago. That's progress. I don't know if the language, behaviors, and attitudes in hockey locker rooms have evolved. I think it's a very conformist culture that is, you think about hockey and you think about, like, kids growing up spend 5-6 nights a week together with their teammates. And they're influenced by coaches who come from the culture and are reinforcing what they learned and perpetuating norms.
Mm-hmm.
And then these players go away to junior. And then they go to a community where they know nobody but their 24 teammates. And they spend day and night together. And all those players come from similar cultures all over. And now it's reinforced even more.
Mm-hmm.
And then they move on to pro. And it's the same thing. They're moving to different cities, different things. But in their off season, they all go home and train with the people they grew up with playing. And players around their age, et cetera. And it's just a constant echo chamber of hockey talk. Day and night from the age of 7.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, of course their language, behaviors, attitudes aren't going to evolve quickly.
Yeah.
How could it?
Yeah.
You know, but I will say this. I think 99.9% of them are really good people. And I don't think there's intentional malice. I think it's just, you know, they're a product of an environment. And I think they would evolve their language. And I think some of them already have at the pro level in different places. And they're so receptive.
Mm-hmm.
They're so receptive to what I'm saying, to what I'm engaging in, and they welcome it. And I had a player that played in the NHL. I was working with an AHL team this week. And he came up to me after the session. He goes, "I wish you'd come in with our team in November."
Mm.
Just because the way it bonded the club, he felt like the longer they would have had that bond, the better the season would have been for them all. And that wouldn't have happened. And I also believe,
yeah,
that even though, you know, hockey culture has the rap it has, and in for a lot of things that have been done that are not good,
mm-hmm,
I do believe they would be the first one to rally around a gay teammate.
Mm.
I think it would be, you know, the language, behaviors, and attitudes might be very tough in that culture for a player to come out, but I think those players would be the first ones out of any sport to support them and embrace them if they did.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that whole family analogy and whatnot, they would rally. Hockey people rally.
Yep.
We just got to teach them how.
Yeah. Yeah. Tomorrow night for the Anaheim Ducks is Pride Night. When you look at teams across the league holding Pride Night, what is the significance of having that special night and showing fans, people in the community, just everyone around, you know, what Pride Night looks like? And every team obviously does it differently, but we're excited to have it, of course, for the Ducks tomorrow night.
Yeah, my answer may shock you.
Okay.
I don't care about Pride Nights.
Okay.
I do in a sense. Here's my thing. I haven't seen a rainbow eradicate homophobia yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes in society right now, we're like, oh, we'll just slap a rainbow on it and it becomes tokenized.
Mm-hmm.
I think what happened today and the engagement we had in that room,
yeah,
with members of the Ducks organization is powerful.
Mm-hmm.
It's like some groups, some teams, and society. I look at it like this, like a Pride Night is like the Stanley Cup parade.
Mm.
But we're having the parade without doing the work to win the cup. And if we have to go beyond the performative and do things to foster safe and welcoming environments for everyone in locker rooms, in the corporate side, everywhere a part of the organization.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's lovely for fans to see that visibility.
Yeah.
I think that's great for a kid at home who may never have seen it and all of a sudden they feel like, oh, I can go there. But in my mind, if we create those spaces for everyone to exist, then yeah, let's have the party and celebrate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it does start from the ground up within organizations like that. Having everyone in the room together, making them comfortable to talk about something that might be uncomfortable for people is important because, you know, it is the backbone of an organization. And then, you know, you translate that throughout the organization.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then from there it matters. But I also see on the other side, I was working with a queer hockey organization this week, and one person in the room, they coach their sons. She coaches her son's youth team.
Mm.
And she was going on the ice and she was getting ready to go to the rink and she put rainbow tape on her knob. And she thought, oh, should I take this off? Like, what if some of the parents don't like it? What if they don't want to see it? And what if they don't want me to coach? And she thought about hiding who she was.
Mm-hmm.
But she pulled it off her stick and then said no and taped it again. And in that moment, I think those nights, those things can be so empowering for people because at that point now it's like, it's what the rainbow did, what the pride tape did was empower her to be herself.
Mm-hmm.
And if they have that impact on people as fans or different things, then that's or people who work in the organization or players, then cool.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
Mm-hmm. You've talked about how your mission has changed, but what kind of impact do you want to have moving forward? As I mean, Shift Makers Tour now coming to an end, but when you look ahead to the future as well.
Yeah, I'm not going to stop trying to be everywhere all the time. I'm too stubborn to not do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I will do it and I'll do it successfully because I'm just a masochist who won't stop. But I think we went to about 60, 75 teams in the US this year and 140 or so in Canada. I'll expand the US.
Mm.
I'll start earlier and so I can get across Canada before it gets cold and
that weather
and then maybe start in the Midwest before it gets cold and go across and get to over 100 teams next year in the United States. I think my messaging is so unique and what I'm doing is so unique. And the to your point about the vulnerability people are showing and their willingness to open up to me, I really think it's a reality show.
Mm.
And Planes, Trains, Automobiles and like getting people to share and engage. And also I'm a lunatic on the road and I can't find, I'll remember something somebody said like in passing and then I'll turn it into a joke 2 hours later in a session, but I lose my keys in the side and the other and I can't, like I can barely keep myself afloat and going like I almost need somebody to feed me every day. I'm like a toddler most of the time. So we're looking at stuff like that. I'm going to turn it into a book.
Mm.
I'm working with somebody right now and we're going to pitch out a book about the tour and about some of the stories anonymously told, of course, and the impact it's having, and the methodology that I'm using to get it there, and sharing what life on the road's like, because everyone's like, oh, it's so cool. I'm like, spend a week with me and see if you like it. And we'll keep doing that and growing those two things while growing the tours, and then hopefully do some more media and amplify. Mm-hmm. Basically, it's like, yeah, maybe I can't get everywhere, and I don't want to say that because I'm stubborn, but maybe it's finding other ways to amplify messaging to get it everywhere.
For you to be able to stay around the hockey community, you talked about, I mean, that was such a huge part of your life. How important is it to you that you have been able to embrace the community still and make your mark in it?
It's funny. I was talking to pros yesterday or 2 days ago, and one of them said, you know, like, I'm near the end of my career and I'm kind of like, I don't know what to do next. And I was just at a wedding this summer where some of my buddies retired pro hockey and they don't know what to do. And I'm like, yeah, we just get back into hockey. I'm like, hockey almost killed me. And what do? I went and started 3 hockey businesses, like masochist. Yeah. Like, what are you thinking? And then I came out and then I, you know, doubled down and now I'm like in locker rooms again across North America for 6 months at a time and only hanging out with hockey bros. It's like, really, you're really doing this to yourself? But I think hockey is incredible. I love it so much. And I think it can be so, when some people get to the rink, all their problems disappear. If you're a kid, whether it's, you know, you got a bad grade on a test or your parents are giving you crap, you lost your cell phone, this, that, or the other, or you're, you know, breaking up with your girlfriend or boyfriend, whatever it is. And, or you're an adult and you're, you know, the stress of work or mortgages or, you know, families and children and all this, you go play rec league and you just get to be around buddies, or even as a pro. And that escape, and you get into the room, nothing else matters. I want that for all people. I want everybody to be able to use hockey as a tool where they show up to the rink and they get into that locker room and nothing else in their life matters because they feel so good in there. So I'm just going to keep doing it until that happens.
Well, looking forward to everything that you keep rolling with. And Brock, thank you for joining us here in the studio today.
Thank you very much.
This is an Anaheim Ducks original production on DuckStream.